I shared a little bit about our current expansion, you might say, a project. But in some sense, as I saw the slide that talked about the 53rd anniversary of our church, and actually the anniversary, I think technically, is like next Sunday, you know, but it's close enough, you know, that we can celebrate that the Lord started this church 53 years ago, and started with 18 people. And we could, in some sense, look at the history of our church by looking at the facilities that we've had. In the beginning, when they started with 18 people, they met in somebody's home. Okay, they didn't have a church building. Later, they moved to rented a storefront on Harrison Ave. Later, they moved to the Pine Street Inn, which is, as you know, a homeless shelter. But we actually rented a certain portion of that homeless shelter for worship. And then finally, they got up enough money, and in 1979, they opened a new building, the 249 Harrison Ave building, and began to meet there. But God blessed the church that we were continuing to grow, and so we rented and borrowed a lot of facilities. We actually bought the building across the street, 237 Harrison Avenue, but we were looking to expand, but we were not able to find a right opportunity to expand in Chinatown. And so in 2003, we learned about this building going on sale, and so we sent a number of our people to begin worship services here in Newton. And right around the same time, we had the opportunity to rent the Quincy Elementary School auditorium as well. And so we recognized that that space may not be permanent, and so we continued to look for more space. We thought we had a deal with the city to swap land, but the schools are still there after, you know, almost 17 years, I think, you know. And so we were kind of discouraged and wondering, how come God doesn't provide for us? You know, we need more space in Chinatown. What, you know? And all of a sudden, the South Cove Manor Nursing Home just said, you know, we're looking to expand in Chinatown, but we couldn't find any space, so we're going to move to Quincy, you know? And so that opened the door for us to buy their building. Now, obviously, there were other people who wanted to buy that building, but God allowed us to be able to buy that building. There were, I'm sure, other people, they particularly said they wanted to sell the building to another Chinatown organization, which limited the number of people and outside developers. But we had to compete against a developer, and somehow God opened the door for us to buy 120 Chaumont. And right after we bought 120 Chaumont, we learned that Holy Trinity Church was on the market. And so we see this as perhaps an opportunity that God is pointing us to. And so this whole process has caused me to think about this particular passage, Numbers chapter 13 and 14, those two chapters. We don't have time to read the entire passage, but take a few moments when you go home to have a look at that, because there's a really interesting story that is there. In some sense, a somewhat of a sad story, but there's a lot of lessons for us. Now, the context for this passage is that God used Moses to deliver the Hebrew people out of slavery in Egypt. And, you know, many of you have seen the Ten Commandments and that kind of thing, with all these spectacular miracles, parting of the Red Sea, that type of thing. From there, they went to Mount Sinai, and they received the Ten Commandments and the law from God. And so from there, they went to the Promised Land. The Promised Land is the land that God promised to give to the people, the Jewish people. And they were right at the edge of that Promised Land, a place called Kadesh Barnea. And in chapter 13, verse 1 and 2, it talks about how they were sending spies into the land to check out the land. And something that you should note, look in verse 2 there. It said, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel." Now, this is the Lord speaking to Moses, right? So he already says, "which I am giving to the people of Israel." So I want you to remember that, okay? That's a very important detail in that what he says. But they were to send out spies into, you know, spy. I'm not sure if the word spy is the right, but reconnaissance team or something like that might be better. They were there to check things out. And there were 12 people that were sent out, and each of those spies were leaders from each of the 12 tribes. Okay, so they weren't just ordinary people. These were like experienced leaders among the different tribes. And they had 40 days to go check out the land, to understand, you know, all the ins and outs of that land and make a report back. And you might say there were two reports that came back. One was what I would call the majority report, because 10 out of the 12 supported this majority report. However, there were two people, Caleb and Joshua, who presented a minority report. And so the majority report came in verse 27. It says, "We came to the land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." Okay? So they were saying that this land is very, very fertile. It's good for grazing. It's good for farming. And they brought back some fruit. And it says that they brought back a big cluster of grapes. Now, it's not like the grapes that you see over in Star Market over there, okay? I mean, you know, imagine they're pretty big. But here, they brought back the grapes, and it was so big, they had to put it, to hang it between a pole between two people, all right? That's how big the cluster of grapes were. So they said, majority report says, oh, this is a very fertile land. However, in verse 28, it says, "The people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large." And so they also brought back the report that the people that lived there, the Canaanites, and they belonged to different groups, but they were really strong, and the cities that they had probably had very high walls, and they had large armies, and even the people there seemed so large, okay? That's the majority report. The minority report, in verse 30, was brought in by Caleb and Joshua. So two out of the 12 said no. You know, yes, there were some things that they agreed with, but they said to them, we should just go in there and occupy it. You know, we're able to overcome these people. That's their assessment after they looked at it. And in Numbers 14, it talks about the response of the people. Who did they listen to? They listened to the majority report. They said, oh, 10 out of the 12 say, you know, it's a good land, but those people are too big for us. We can't take them, you know. And so the people, it says in verse chapter 14, verse 1, they raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And it says all the people grumbled against Moses and Aaron. And the congregation was saying, well, you know, we should have died in Egypt. We should have died in the wilderness. Why is God bringing us to this land, and we're just going to get killed by the Canaanites? And so, you know, our wives, our children, they're going to just be, you know, slaughtered. And so, let's choose a leader and let's go back to Egypt. All right? And this is the response of the people. Basically, they listen to the majority report. And starting verse 5, it tells us the response of Moses and Aaron, and also the two people that brought the minority report, Joshua and Caleb. And they were really upset. I mean, they fell on their faces, it says, and they tore their clothes, which is a sign of mourning. And they said, this land is a good land. And if the Lord delights in us, He will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord. And do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. So Moses, particularly, was trying to get the people to change their mind, to reassure them that God's with us. You don't have to worry. You don't have to be afraid. God is going to be with us. But the people didn't listen to Moses. In fact, they were ready to kill him, stone him. And then God comes, all right? Or He was there, but He intervenes at this point. And you can imagine God is upset. He's mad at these people. He says in verse 11, how long will this people despise me? And how long will they not believe in me in spite of all the signs that I've done among them? And so God says, I'm going to kill all these people and just start all over again with the descendants of Moses, okay? But Moses intervenes for the people. I mean, even though they were ready to kill him, Moses, Moses still loved them and intervened for them. And so God had another plan. And, you know, I think God knew all this along, but, you know, He allowed Moses to kind of show his real passion, his intercession for the people, you might say. Sort of a model of Jesus, if you might say, right? And so, but God had another plan, and so He said, okay, I won't kill all of them. However, the 10 spies who brought the majority report, they're going to be killed immediately, right? And anyone over the age of 20 will not be allowed to enter the promised land, except Caleb and Joshua. Okay? So you can imagine all the people, and let's say we say, how many people are under 20 here? Okay? We would say, okay, you're the ones that are going to be saved. Everyone else was wiped out in this situation. Right? I mean, not wiped out, but they were allowed to die over a 40-year period, basically. Okay? That God would not allow them to go into the promised land. And they'd have to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Because those people that were older definitely had seen God work in Egypt with the miracles, with the plagues, with the parting of the Red Sea. And yet they still didn't have faith in God. And so God punished them for that. And they had to wander for 40 years in the wilderness. And so how would we compare and contrast the two groups? The majority group, you know, that represented most of the people and the 10 spies, or the minority group, which was basically Joshua, Caleb, Moses, and Aaron. Well, they both saw that the land was good, right? The 10 spies reported back that it's a land that flows with milk and honey. And basically, that's a metaphorical way of saying, you know, it has a lot of pasture, a lot of grazing land. It's going to be a lot of milk, okay? And it means a lot of places for farming so that there would be lots of honeybees and they would make lots of honey and that kind of thing. And so basically they're saying this is a great land to go into, all right? And they all agreed on that. Even Caleb and Joshua said this. Numbers 14, verse 7. The land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. All right, so there's no disagreement about the fact that the promised land was a good land. However, the majority group, they focus on the giants, right? The minority group, they focused on God. That's the difference, the key difference here. You see, the majority group, they looked at the problems. They looked at the obstacles. They said the cities are fortified and, you know, the people are huge, they're stronger. Now, you might be saying, well, is that sort of an exaggeration? Well, I think there might be some truth in what they're saying. Actually, those people might have been, you know, I don't know, 7 feet, 8 feet, whatever tall, because later on we see in the story of David and Goliath, there were a bunch of people that were like that, that were extremely huge, right? And so maybe this is where they came from. But they certainly exaggerated it to the point where they said, we're like grasshoppers compared to these people, all right? And, you know, grasshoppers, I haven't seen one in a long time, to be honest. But if you remember, you know, they're not tiny like ants, but they're pretty big, but they're still small compared to us. And they said, the majority of people said, this land devours its inhabitants, all right? So they're really scared. And thought that, oh no, there's no way that we could go in and take this land. Whereas the minority group, they said, our focus is on God, not the giants. It's on God. And they believe what God promised. And remember back, as I mentioned to you in verse 2 of chapter 13, God spoke to Moses and said, spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel. So God told them already, I am giving you this land. All right? And so if God says He's going to give you this land, you should believe it. It's not like, well, I might give it to you, or maybe. He says, I am giving to the people of Israel. And so, and plus, the people should have remembered what God did already in Egypt, for instance, right? And all those miracles that took place during that time when they were enslaved by the Egyptian people and people had no hope, God performed some miraculous miracles there. And God showed He could do the impossible. And this story takes place approximately less than 2 years from, you know, all those miracles. So it's not like, oh yeah, that was like 30 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever. This is 2 years ago that this happened. And yet, most of the people did not have faith in God, except for these few people. And Joshua and Caleb in particular, they said, the Canaanites, their protection is removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. Right? And so, the majority group looked at the giants. But the minority group looked at God. The majority group looked at the barriers, but the minority group looked at the blessings. The majority group looked at the fortified cities, and their faith crumbled. But the minority group had faith, and that the cities would crumble, all right? And the majority group said the best was behind them. Let's go back to Egypt. The minority group says, no, the best is in front of us. Let's go and take the land. So we see in this story, there's a real contrast between the majority group and the minority group. And obviously the lesson for us is to be like that minority group, right? Now, let's make sure that we understand the similarities and the differences with our situation, all right? Now, there are certain similarities that story has with our church today. The Hebrew people were at the edge of the promised land, right? They were about, potentially could go right in. And so they were at a very critical juncture in their journey. And so I would say our church is also a very critical juncture in our history. We have seen God work in providing 120 Chaminade. the Sovcomm Manor Nursing Home, how he gave it to us, in spite of perhaps other people thinking, oh no, we would never be able to get it. But God worked in a very powerful way to do it, and I shared with you some of those details, but you know, it's really, in some sense, you have to understand, see it from the expansion committee's perspective, how discouraged many of us were when the swap didn't seem like it was going anywhere. And we didn't think of anything else that we could do. And out of the blue, the Sovcomm Manor Nursing Home decides to move out of Chinatown, right? After they've been there for, you know, 20, 25 years, okay? 30 years they've been there. And so God provided this for us. And now, right after we bought 120 Shawmut, this building is available. It's on the market. And so we are also at a critical juncture in our history. And number two, we are investigating the opportunity. All right? The Hebrew people, God told, and Moses sent out 12 spies, right? They said, go out there and check out this land. Give us some information. We need some more data, all right? And so go in there and check it out. And that's what they did. They had 45 days to go and spy out the land. And our church has about 40 days. Okay, I don't know exactly, but you know, they put it on the market May 1st of this year, and they said, we intend to market it, you know, for perhaps 45 days, okay? So I don't know if I misstated that, but you know, the Hebrew people had 40 days, and we have about 45 days, or approximately, to check out the land, you might say, check out this building, and before we would make a bid. And so we're trying to gather information and get as much information as we can before we make a decision. And then number three, I would think that the report may be similar, all right? In terms of what they saw when the spies went into Canaan, they said, oh yeah, the land is flowing with milk and honey. It's a good land. But there are giants in that land. The people, the walls are fortified, the people are really big, and we can't overcome it. That's what they suggested. They understood it to happen. I think even by looking at some of the pictures that we saw, we would say, oh, there's a lot of space in there, you know? Space that's already like a church already, and it's right next door, you know, to our church. Our 120 Shawmut app. And so, you know, what should we do? And so I think there's a similarity in the sense that maybe it may seem like, oh yeah, there's some good points to that building, but there's also some barriers. And we don't have all the information yet. We don't know how much it will cost to renovate the building, to maintain the building, all those kinds of things. We're trying to find out as much as we can. But I would expect, especially since it's in the city of Boston, that it's not going to be cheap. It's probably expensive even. Okay? And so it's going to cost something, right? And so, I would say, in some sense, there's a lot of similarities, but there's also very important key difference. All right? The Israelites knew that it was God's will for them to take the promised land. Right? He said it, actually, God told them many times, even to Abraham. Back then, he already told them that they're going to get this land. And so he talked about it to Moses, and so they knew it was God's will. We don't know whether it is God's will to us to also purchase the Holy Trinity Church. We don't know. All right? We have to discern whether it is God's will for us. I did not hear a voice from heaven. I didn't have a dream that says, oh, go buy Holy Trinity Church. All right? Didn't happen. you know. And the way I try to discern God's will is say, okay, I'm tell God, even before I know what you want me to do, I need to be willing to do it and follow it. So whatever you want, I express my submission to you as the God who knows everything, and you just tell us what to do, and we'll just do it. All right? And as we have that kind of attitude, then God will show us what He wants us to do. But if we're saying, well, God, I only like these two choices, A and B, so which one should I choose? Well, maybe God has C in mind, right? And so we have to be willing to obey God, whatever He wants us to do, be submissive to Him. Then He will show us His will. And then we have a process that we go through in our church. It's not that I, as a senior pastor, decide, oh yeah, we're going to go and buy this thing. We all, in some sense, need to decide together. Okay? And so as a church, we have a certain constitution, we have certain boards, and so if the board of elders have to agree, the deacons have to agree, and the congregation has to agree. And if any of those don't happen, I would say it's not God's will. Alright? And also, it's possible that the Roman Catholic Church will sell it to someone else, right? That's possible. Someone will outbid us, and the opportunity would be gone. And then we could say, well, it's not God's will. I know many of you young people applied to different colleges, and, you know, some of you were excited, some of you were disappointed. And I would say, if God wanted you to go into that school, you would have been accepted, right? Potentially. But if you didn't get in, probably not God's will, right? And so I think we have to understand how God can work. And so at this point, we don't know whether we should buy it. And that's why it's really important for us to be praying, okay? So let me give you some applicational points out of this story, some principles. Number one, the majority is not always right, okay? In this story, we see that the majority report, 10 out of the 12, and actually most of the people would say, you know, oh, let's go back to Egypt. That was their idea. And so the majority is not always right. And so we need to depend on godly leadership, and we need to submit ourselves to the Lord, but it's not always that what most of the people will say. The second, God's way does not mean we do not have to do anything. All right? In other words, what God wanted them to go forward and possess the promised land. But it wasn't like it was some vacant land. You know, this land was filled with people who worshiped other gods, who were fierce warriors and had large armies and all this kind of thing. They had to take the land. All right? And so it doesn't, God's will doesn't necessarily mean, oh, it's a piece of cake. It's easy. We just go in the path of least resistance, right? That's not necessarily God's way. Sometimes God tells us to go in a way that's going to be hard, that will involve sacrifice, right? That in certainly in the case of the Jewish people, they had to go in and conquer the land. That means they had to wage war. That meant some people were going to get wounded. Some people were going to get killed. All right? Yet it was God's will for them to get that land. And so how does that work? And so we need to understand that God's way may not necessarily is the way that path of least resistance. Same thing, if it's God's will to us to buy Holy Trinity, it doesn't mean, oh, it's a piece of cake. It may involve sacrifice on our part. It may involve us to give more, right? There might be obstacles in there that we need to overcome, some legal obstacles or whatever obstacles that are there. And so, but the bottom line is that God wants to see faith in His people. He wants to see us to believe in Him, that we're not focused on the giants, but we're focused on God. that we're not focused on the problems, but we see it as an opportunity for God to help you to overcome those things. And so He doesn't want us to complain and to murmur or whatever. He wants us to have faith in Him. And so that's His consistent message throughout the Bible. We studied Hebrews in this congregation recently. Hebrews 11, verse 6. And without faith, it's impossible to please Him. Romans 14, 23. For whatever does not proceed from faith is sin. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. For we walk by faith and not by sight. Okay? And so, now, that verse, we walk by faith and not by sight, it doesn't mean that we just close our eyes and just walk blindly. All right? I think it's good for us to study, you know, the obstacle, the Holy Trinity, to be able to understand all the ins and outs of that building. And we need to, just as the people went into the land to spy out the land, they were getting data. They were getting information, right? And so that's not wrong to do that. In fact, the reason why the book of Numbers is called the book of Numbers, actually, is because they were numbering the people. They were actually counting the number of potential soldiers that they would have to go into the promised land. That's why it's called Numbers, right? And so, you know, so it's good to know what you have and what you're up against. But in the end, you can also have to have faith in what God can do. And so if it's God's will for us to do it, then we need to have faith that God will help us to accomplish what He wants us to do. And that's what it means. And so I would say this decision about whether to buy Holy Trinity is not a financial decision. It's not a business decision. It's a spiritual decision. All right? And so that's why we're asking people to pray, to ask God to lead us, to guide us, to show us what He wants us to do. And that's why, particularly at this critical juncture, that we need to understand what God's will is. And, you know, yes, there are giants, you might say, in the land. I mean, you know, this weekend is Gay Pride Weekend, or they call it Pride Weekend, I guess, now. And so we are a church that believes that God says we love these people, but we don't endorse what they do, their sin. And so we might say, oh, that's not very popular today. You know, how do we expect to grow as a church if we maintain a stance that is in tune with what God says? Don't we know that this is Boston, New England, a liberal area? You know, why would we want to buy a church if potentially, you know, Christianity may, you know, decline even in this area, right? I mean, there are giants out there that we have to look and face and say, well, yeah, does God want us to just, you know, hunker down and hold out, right? And save our money so that we can have our nice homes? Or does God say, no, we need to advance the kingdom. We need to go out there and share the gospel. We need to have the facilities to accommodate even more people, right? And so that's some of the things. And we could also apply it on an individual basis because, again, there might be sacrifice that we're asking people to make. And we may say, well, yeah, the economy is doing okay now, but it could go down at any moment. You know, it's really fragile. You know, and, you know, we could have all these reasons and excuses, and we can see the giants, but we can see God, right? And so the question is, you know, who are we going to look and see? And so, again, we ask you to pray and pray for this whole thing as God leads our church. And let me conclude with this one observation or story. In Numbers chapter 13, verse 31, the majority report came back and says, those people said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. Okay? And I focused on those words, we are not able. All right? And it made me actually think back to the time when I first joined the church. And they were in the midst of building, trying to raise money for the 249 building in Chinatown. And they were mostly blue-collar people, students, and sewing factory workers. And it was a huge mountain for them to raise enough money to build this building. All right? And Pastor Tan was helping to lead a fundraising effort. And I remember him distinctly. And Pastor Tan's English is not very good. But I remember him, they adapted a song, and it's not the song that we just sang before about God is able, but the song is He is Able, you know, and I won't even attempt to sing it for you, but, you know, it's kind of a cute song, you know, He's able, you know, in that one, you know. And when I saw that word, we are not able, but if we are Christians, He is able. God is able. And I just remember, you know, Pastor Tan's, again, didn't have a great singing voice. His English wasn't very good, but he had conviction. He believed he is able. And I hope that that's the kind of faith that we have in our church in what God can do. Let's bow together in prayer. Father in heaven, we recognize that we are a very critical point in our church's history, and what decisions we make now will affect generations to come, perhaps. And so we want to be remembered as a people of faith that believed in you and that relied upon you in prayer, that we sought your face, that we sought your will, whatever it may be, that we're willing to do whatever you want us to do. And so we pray that you would unite our people, even in this Newton English congregation, even though they may not be directly affected by the purchase of this building, Lord, you made them a part of this church. And so we desire, Lord, that we are united together in prayer to you to seek your will and whatever direction that you have, that we would have confidence and faith, not that we are able, but you are able. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.